There we go. Today is July 7th, 2021. Hello. This is episode number 550 of the Apple Context Machine. That's a podcast for the Mac Observer. And I'm Brian Chaffin, and I do not have a cone of shame. So, you know, huzzah for me. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, you can shoot me a note at macobserver. Yeah, macobserver.com. That's how it works. You know, I'm going to get this down one day. MacObserver.com/contact machine. That'll take you straight over to our Facebook group. And today, folks, I have a rare treat for you. Two guest hosts. First up is Jeff Gamet. Jeff.
Brian, once again, it's awesome to hang out with you. And you say you don't have a cone of shame, but the day is young. So
it's a fair point.
Could change.
That is a fair point. And also joining us is John Keat. John?
I'm thinking of calling my ranch the Cone of Shame Ranch.
The Cone of Shame Ranch. I like it. I like it. That, you know, like if you actually, like if you didn't, like just had like a bunch of dogs, that would be fantastic.
I'll get a few.
Okay. All right.
Each of them, only a few grams lighter.
And our sponsor this week is LinkedIn Jobs. I'm going to be telling you about them later on. But this show was brought about because in one of our, one of John's, I'm trying to distance myself as much as possible, John. One of your chat groups, you made the comment.
One of his exclusive online conversation groups.
Excellent. I like that. You started talking about like some individual features. I guess it was after WWDC, and you said that it would be interesting to talk about what the best features of the different OSs were in retrospect. Like, you know, with the lens of time, what are the features that have stood out as the most useful, the best, favoritest, et cetera. And that's what brings us here today. So we don't know how far we're going to get. This could be either a 2 OS show or a 1 OS show, I think. Is that right? Do you agree with that, gentlemen?
I think it's a pretty safe bet it's going to be a 1 OS show. Now,
by the time you, dear listener, hear this, we will already have found out that answer. But as we're recording, we don't yet know. So let's start with iOS. Who wants to go first?
All right. I think the major feature we will all agree on is the greatest feature of all is iOS 1.0, that it came into existence, basically completely changed everyone's lives.
OS, not a feature.
Well, it's the mobile.
We're looking at features, sir.
This could be the throwaway answer. Because
how about the OS? The OS is a feature that it worked on a tiny phone that was underpowered and had very little memory, and that it would actually work for several hours and make calls and all that stuff. I think that the basic OS was revolutionary in and of itself. And the core of that we still use to this day, the microkernel, all that jazz. So I think that was it was a surprisingly useful phone.
What aspect of that in a handheld device, which feature do you think was the standout feature that made the original iPhone OS work?
The multi-touch GUI.
Yep, I can agree with that. Layer. It changed everything.
Okay.
The whole smartphone landscape at the moment that everyone during the keynote, right after Steve Jobs said, "Do you get it?" And we collectively gasped. That was the moment that the entire smartphone industry changed, and the cell phone industry, the cell service provider industry changed. And it was Steve giving or showing off the iPhone with iOS 1.0.
I remember just when he flicked the list, the scroll list, just the basic scroll list items. The crowd gasped because it had the little bit of bounce on it and stuff. Everything about that GUI was so slick. So to me, that was, and every once in a while, I'll see people do speed tests on version one of the iPhone versus, you know, the current one, and it's something like, you know, 10,000 times faster or whatever it is. But it's shocking that even as slow as it was, how many features were really well done back then and how usable it was. It was, I think it was it one of the AT&T fellas or maybe Motorola fellas said something, you think you're just going to come into the cell phone industry and just take it over, being snide about it. And the answer was
I think that was actually Palm.
Oh, was it Palm?
Yeah. Was it Palm?
You're right. Yeah.
I thought so because, I mean, they were totally rocking it with the Treos at that point.
That was probably the closest thing. Yeah, that was probably the best thing out there were the Treos.
And Microsoft, Steve Ballmer, he was totally mocking what Apple was doing as well. And, but, you know, we can see how that worked out for both of those companies.
Yep.
Yep. And for Steve Ballmer eventually.
Yeah, well, things worked out pretty well for him because he's set. So
I wonder where the Palm guys are now, and girls, Palm folks.
Well, they were absorbed into Hewlett Packard.
Yeah, the individuals. The individuals. I wonder where they are now. What are they doing?
Don't know.
I don't either.
Some of them broke off for Handspring. And of which, of course, is gone now, too.
Yeah. So I wonder, I mean, like, I wonder if they've gone on to do other things or if they are all happily retired in post-tech bliss. We don't know the answer to this.
And far be it from us to look it up.
I was interested to see that Randy Wigginton has continued to work all this time and has worked for a whole bunch of different companies. He was the first programmer that Apple hired.
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, and he's still working.
Yeah. He's still working.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wonder if he's working because he has, because he's the type to work or he's never got the big payday and stock options that he deserved.
Might be a little from column A and a little from column B, but he did go on to some of the companies he's worked for since then were very big successes. So hopefully he's doing well.
I hope so too. Yeah, a lot of kind of ex Apple folks, they seem to have done well. And when they're done, it's kind of sad. They go on and become, you know, members of some investment group, but basically they're done. They're not doing the productive stuff that they used to do. What was the guy that did the kernel work for years for Apple?
Avi Tabanian.
Yeah, Avi. Yeah, he went to work for that. I forget the investment group, and really hasn't done much since. I think he tried one startup, and it kind of went nowhere.
I wonder how many of those people aren't doing other things now because their tenure at Apple just basically burned them out.
I think that's the case for a lot of people. And then other people, of course, are affected by perhaps their big walkaway payday or their, you know, big payday that they accumulated while they were working. And I think that not being hungry is obviously a demotivator for a lot of folks, right? That's a relatively common thing. But I would imagine that those who continue to work are very driven to work. And that the other folks, it's one or other of those. They were either burned out to a crisp, especially by Steve Jobs, like looking at the original Mac folks, and or happily fat and rich. It's my guess.
Yeah,
seems reasonable.
I'm glad we've gotten through one feature that we've disagreed on in about 10 minutes of talking. That's awesome.
Yeah, we're doing. We're doing really, really, really well. All right. Well, then, so John went first. Jeff, your turn.
All right. I will follow the rules that John initially created, I must point out, and then promptly disregarded with his first pick. So my first pick comes from that very first version of iPhone OS, because that's what it was called back then, and that is Visual Voicemail.
Visual Voicemail. Good one, man. That is Now, did Apple, though, actually invent that, or was that something that BlackBerry had done first?
I don't recall if BlackBerry was doing it first, but I know that it seemed incredibly revolutionary when Apple announced it, and not just from the reality distortion field presentation during the keynote, but just as a new feature in general.
I'm pretty sure BlackBerry didn't have it in any practical sense, because I was a big BlackBerry user at the time, and that was not a thing.
So, according to ye old Wikipedia, in 2007, that was the year the iPhone was introduced, UMail was the first third-party multi-platform visual voicemail service for mobile phones, storing voicemail in the cloud rather than the mobile carrier's network, and which also known as the cloud, and providing access to it through any web browser or by email. So that is not anywhere near as cool as what iPhone OS was doing.
Right. That's a great pick, Jeff. I agree. That's a great one.
That is a really good one, Jeff. Nice and mad. Yeah.
Thank you. And still a key feature that I use all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And now it's even more visual because they have the transcripts. And I don't know when that started, with like iOS 12 or something like that, I guess. So it's even more visual.
All right. That's a good one. So, all right, we managed to do our second one in only 2 or 3 minutes. That's good. John, your turn.
You're not doing one?
No. I'm moderating.
I see.
That's Brian's professional way of saying he did not prepare.
I see.
And what's amazing is, deny that.
your denials go unaffecting the listeners. What's amazing is, in the entire history, you would think that at least one or two features would pop in your mind. But anyway, I'll start with, how about the App Store? That's a pretty big revolution, for better or for worse, in a whole lot of ways, but certainly makes distribution and adding and removing apps easier.
Well, all right. So
iOS 2.
That is, which came out only 6 months, 9 months after the first?
It was with iOS 2.0.
And which felt like it was rushed out to get the App Store out.
It was probably over a year later, I think.
But I think it was. It was well over a year later. Maybe even like a year and a half later.
iOS 2,
it gave us the App Store and it started giving us features that people were saying, how could this have never been in iPhone OS at the time to begin with? And then that feature set finally finished getting fleshed out with iOS 3, as I recall.
July 11th, 2008, so definitely a year later.
Okay.
But we had rumors that an App Store was coming in the lead up to that. And I'm pretty sure those were rumors from Apple.
Right.
Not even control leaks, just deliberate leaks.
Do you remember the whole butthurt thing with people freaking out and being so angry over Steve Jobs saying, you don't need to have native apps, make web apps?
Yes, that was an initial reaction that was wrong.
That was horribly wrong.
All right, I do have a feature, and I'm also going back to the original iPhone, and that is the marriage of hardware and software that made Google Maps possible. And having your iPhone be able to be a GPS device.
Sure.
And interesting you would say GPS device, because that first iPhone did not have a GPS.
Oh, was it the second? Was it the 3G that did that? When did Google Maps become a thing?
Well, Google Maps is already a thing, but having
on a phone as an app.
I'm assuming it was already available on the Windows phones of the time, and probably the Treos. BlackBerry liked to do their own thing.
It wasn't on the Treos or the Blackberries. I didn't have it on either of those.
And yeah, it doesn't surprise me. It wasn't on BlackBerry because they always wanted to do their own thing. So maybe on Windows Phone?
That I don't know. I never use Windows Phone. So it's possible. I don't think it was on. I think it was that was a pretty big cooperative that they did. And let me put it this way, at least as accessible as it was. And although, Jeff, you're technically correct, the first phone did not have GPS. Google Maps still had a sort of weak GPS that I think it used either cell towers and or Wi-Fi. So
we struggled.
It had a big blue area guessing roughly where you were, which was, you know, good enough starting point. But yeah, you definitely didn't have like, you know, turn by turn stuff and whatever.
To the best of my knowledge, iPhone location still favors cell tower and Wi-Fi and then falls back to GPS as a last resort.
Yeah. Maybe right. I think, yeah, because it's for one thing, because that data battery is at hand and the battery, yeah. For sure. All right. That so there. I did have one. I put lots of time and effort into researching that, both of you. And I was completely prepared for the show.
Mm-hmm. Well done, Brian.
All right. I'm going to jump in. Cut, copy, and paste. It only took him like 2 years to get that to us. So I use that a lot still. Great.
Wasn't that insane that it took so long to get that?
Version 3.0 is when that came out. Ridiculous.
Yeah. Version 3 was when I feel like iOS is actually really fleshed out. And at that point was a fully functioning operating system.
And no longer.
You know what else we got? Beta.
Yeah.
We got two other things that in retrospect are nuts that it took that long. We got video recording. Took till version 3.0 to get. So it was only still photos until then.
I forgot about that.
And car navigation, turn-by-turn navigation, wasn't a thing until 3.
Holy crap, really?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, to your point, Jeff, I think you're right. Like, 3.0 was when, you know, it really matured a lot of long time necessary things were finally put into it.
Well, here's my question about copy and paste is why? I mean, there was a reason. Now, that reason may well have somehow been incompetence with the iPhone OS team. I don't buy that for a second. Or it could have been that Steve didn't think it was important. I could easily buy that.
I doubt that.
It seems like it would have been in front. Okay, so why did it take so long?
Because the gesture and mechanism that they came up with was sucky, and it's still sucky to this day. Like, it's so fiddly how to select things, and it just doesn't flow like much of the rest of the OS is. And I think that they probably had 3 or 4 different variations, and all of them sucked. And they just picked the one that least sucked after it took too long because they just couldn't come up with a better mechanism for it. And I think that's what was the delay. I mean, obviously, the operating system inherently had copy and paste because the libraries were basically fundamentally from Mac OS, which clearly supported copy and paste. It wasn't a programmatic thing. Yeah, it wasn't a programmatic thing. It was a implementation thing. And I think they just, after a certain time, if they couldn't come up with a better mechanism, they just had to choose the least of evil.
So you think that there was like dissatisfaction behind the scenes with what they had come up with so far, possibly competing approaches that were still, people were still dissatisfied with, and then finally they just said, well, we'll just pick one and go with it. You think that's what happened?
Or maybe they came up to a hybrid of, it took them a lot of time, I think, internally to get consensus on what to go with. I don't think it was a
technical. It wouldn't problem. Surprise me if part of the delay was when the original iPhone was released, I don't think Apple had a really firm grasp about how users were going to really use the phone. I mean, they knew that it was going to be the four things that they showed off. You know, it's a phone, it's a music player, it's an internet connection device. But I think that they really didn't have a firm idea about how people were really going to use iPhones. And so they needed to have that first year of collecting data on how we used the device to start figuring out how we were going to be using the device.
Yeah, that's a fair point. That is a fair point. I thought that was even more so the case with iPad, where Apple had no idea how we were going to use the iPad, and it was also probably to a lesser extent the case with the phone.
It was the case with the Apple Watch as well.
Yeah, go ahead.
They threw it out and didn't even know how to brand it to us.
While I applaud the Apple paid apologist excuse there by Jeff, that explains it through version 1.0.
All right, right, and then after that, what's the deal? Why
exactly?
Yeah,
exactly. So there was some reason for the delay to go on as long as it did, and we may never know, or hopefully some employee someday will spill the beans on why it took so long. But I suspect it was displeasure with the concepts for copy and paste. And again, as much as I use copy and paste, I probably equally curse at it because it's such a fiddly implementation.
It is a pretty frustrating setup. Okay, here's another one for you. iMessage.
As opposed to SMS?
As opposed to SMS. And so, that's because when Apple rolled out iMessage, what they did was they gave the finger to the cell service providers. And they created a system that we didn't have to pay for, just like we shouldn't have had to pay for SMS. And
hold on. To be fair, it was a source of immense profits for the carriers.
Oh, you know, I stand corrected. My bad. but with iMessage, you know, Apple made the whole multi-content in a message thing approachable for the average person. It didn't cost anything extra. And then it ended up as a catalyst to change how cell service providers, at least in the United States, treat their messaging services.
Yeah, it removed it as a source of immense profit, and meaning that they stopped. They were no longer able to charge consumers. You know, I mean, it used to be like, you know, you'd be paying for like 50 text messages. Am I remembering that correctly?
You would buy blocks of messages.
Like 50 and 100.
Yeah, or if you didn't, then you're paying like 10 cents a message. Both ways.
Yeah.
Outgoing and incoming.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was never a big cost for the carriers. Right, those prices they were charging were not reflective of the underlying cost. They were reflective of the underlying desire to please shareholders.
Right. Yeah. What they were doing was taking that SMS message, your text, and they were throwing it into the empty header block in the data transmissions that were going back and forth from your phone. So they weren't even having to increase overhead. It was just going along in a data packet that already existed.
What's interesting is this is still an iOS 1.0 feature. Just think about it would be interesting to see the statistics on what we choose and what percentage of those were in 1.0 and early versions versus what are the, you know, have there been any amazing.
You know, the funny thing is, John, now that you say that, I looked at my notes before we started recording because like Brian, I prepared, you know.
Yeah, well, anyhow, I set the tone and you guys just, you know, sweep along in my wake.
It's what we do. Anyhow, my list of iPhone features is almost exclusively from 1.0.
That's interesting. That's interesting.
That is interesting.
All right. Next pick, Jeff. I picked this last one.
Okay. I'm going to pick a very specific thing that that I think really changed the way people look at how they physically interact with their phones, and that's pinch to zoom.
Oh, pinch, yeah.
That multi-touch gesture thing. I mean, prior to iPhone 1.0, you're doing a stylus.
Yeah, and
I think
lots of people like to take this for granted, especially Android apologists like to take this for granted about, you know, how it's such an obvious thing. But it was not an obvious thing before it became the obvious thing. And it became the obvious thing because Apple figured it out and brought it to market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to be fair, they didn't invent pinch to zoom. It existed in other systems, but they brought it to the phone, at least, well, in a popularized way. Let's put it that way.
Who did invent it? Because that is directly contrary to everything I just said. And I'm happy to be corrected.
Ted, which are just the worst podcasts on earth where people self-promote, the only one that they ever had was decent. And they had this one where I forget the fellow's name, but it was before the iPhone's announcement. And he did these touch systems. And companies like Fingerworks and other companies had all these gestures that they were working on. And he... I'll look it up while one of you guys chats, but it was around at least a year before that, and he was bringing a product to market. It had been done, I think, in universities and other areas too. So Apple did not invent pinch and zoom. They
put it in your pocket.
They may have, although I'm not sure, been the first to put it kind of on a small mobile device like a phone. I'm not even sure about that. But they certainly implemented it. Were the first to implement it holistically on an entire system, you know, within the phone, as far as I know.
I think that makes me entirely wrong with everything I said. So I'm just going to go ahead and snip that out so that no one hears me be catastrophically wrong. And I appreciate the reminder, John.
No worries. But I think it also falls back in kind of what I was saying. The initial GUI of the phone was pretty, it had so much in it, and pinch to zoom was part of it. And, you know, it really kind of, otherwise we could be spending hours here, I think, on so many innovations on that initial.
Let me derail with one more tiny, very specific, AIM, because I think it is foundational, and that's Steve Jobs' insistence that iPhone not require a stylus.
I think that was actually a very important design decision.
I mean, I still want to punch him in the face for his, you have 10 on your finger, so entirely freaking wrong. Unless you're Miro.
Yeah, he clearly hasn't spent any time in the ER at about 11 o'clock at night on 4th of July.
that's true. But also, fine art does require some sort of stylus-like manipulation. However, the insistence that it not require a stylus was, and as I understand it, he was like, furiously dogmatic about that. And that aspect I completely agree with, that it not require a stylus.
And to this day, every app you use on your iPhone or iPad, you can use without a stylus.
Yeah. There are some that work better with the stylus, as it should be, mm-hmm. but none of them require it.
Yep.
Okay.
That was an amazing feature.
So that is my second half-assed contribution to this conversation. John?
So, I don't know what, I don't know if I should throw an umbrella on this, but I guess I kind of will. AirPlay, and what I'm going to call kind of the device casting technologies that Apple came up with, which would also include continuity.
Also on my list.
And things like that. Now, AirPlay didn't come out till iOS 4.2, if I'm looking at it, and then, you know, AirPlay 2 and other things, and continuity came out much later, but kind of that whole your device is a magic wand types of technologies, that it's casting spells on external devices and interoperating with them. I think that was a really big thing. I use it pretty regularly, and a nice feature.
To build on that feature.
Wait, hold on. Before you do that, John, let me tell you a little bit about LinkedIn Jobs. Today, many small business owners are busier than ever because they're focused on managing and growing their businesses. They can't always spend the time they wish they could on recruiting, and that's why LinkedIn Jobs has made it easier to find and hire the best candidates for free. You can get started by posting your first job for free to reach LinkedIn Network's 740 million professionals. 740 million. You can fill out targeted screening questions to get your role in front of the most qualified candidates with the experience, skills, and motivation you need. And then my favorite aspect about LinkedIn Jobs is the very easy to use interface where you can manage all of your candidates and your job postings, and it's all right there at your fingertips. It works really well, and it's really easy to use. LinkedIn Jobs will help you hire the right person for your role. Did you know every week nearly 40 million job seekers visit LinkedIn? You can post your first job for free at linkedin.com/ACM. That's linkedin.com/ACM. And all because you're listening to this podcast. Get that first job post for free. Again, one more time, linkedin.com/ACM. To post your first job for free. Terms and conditions apply. I appreciate them sponsoring this week's show. All right. Thanks for letting me interrupt, Jeff. Go ahead.
Yeah, whatever. I mean, no problem. Okay. So we need to add AirDrop to John's list.
I agree.
And
AirDrop is great.
Yeah. AirDrop, once that came out, and in the beginning, it was a little bit unstable and unreliable. But once that all got worked out, holy crap, I use AirDrop almost daily. And I bet if I kept a log of how I use it or when I use it, I would probably realize, oh, no, I actually am using it daily.
That was introduced in iOS 7.
Yeah, so far that's the latest operating system with the feature that I have tossed out.
The suckiest UI metaphor ever, and the flat UI stuff.
Anyway, I disagree with that. That's not this particular show's topic.
Maybe that's the next show. The suckiest features Apple has introduced. That'd be a pretty good list.
Oh,
that's a good one.
Yeah, coming for you, Mr. Forstel.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so continuing to build on John's theme, seeing the progression of that whole magic wand thing of I can throw files here and here and send stuff here and grab it from here, seeing where this is going with iOS 15 and iPadOS 15 when that comes out this fall, now we have universal control. And that just seems to me like the natural progression of these features, because at that point, now it becomes this incredibly fluid thing about where your files are, where you're sending them, where you're working with them, and even taking it to what input devices am I using with each of these devices on the fly, and it's just figuring it out. So seeing that progression for me is great, and it's actually pretty exciting because Apple has, with these features over the years, really enhanced the way that I use my iOS devices and my Mac.
Well,
agreed.
If I can sort of derail, and I mean, I know we end up talking about the future a lot on the show, and I think about I think about both Larry Niven's sci-fi and also William Gibson's sci-fi, and to a lesser extent, Dan Simmons' sci-fi, since he hasn't done a whole lot that's near future. But the whole idea of, I think that Apple is taking us towards that William Gibson point in time where our computer is the thing that we carry around in our pocket, and it carries around our data, and it carries around our CPU, and then we interact with that data from whatever device is nearby and handy. So whatever display is nearby and handy, it might be your display. It might be your display on your desk. It could conceivably be the display on the device in your pocket, or it could be a projection from a device that's, you know, embedded in your clothes, or it could be goggles or glasses, I should say, or it could be contact lenses, or eventually,
or it could be CarPlay,
or CarPlay. Or the, you know, display at the library or restaurant or whatever, or eventually, of course, the brain implant that is projecting stuff directly onto your vision. But the whole point, I think, is Phil Schiller's comment about the iPhone having relevance for the next 50 years. And the only way that makes sense is if it becomes more and more the device that interacts with all the other devices. And eventually, I think our Macs will be subsumed by whatever the iPhone is called at that point that we carry around in our pocket. And then again, we interface with it with the task appropriate input and output mechanisms or devices that are you know, where we want to use them. And I think this is the extension of what you two were just talking about. That is where it's going to take us.
I agree with you, and I would add CarPlay to kind of that magic wand casting, you know, extension of the phone. And there it's quite literally that, because it's really just kind of broadcasting a second screen to a receiving device. But to extend it different, and I think it is a little bit different because it starts to deconstruct what you were either deconstruct or affirm what you were just saying, Brian, is HomeKit. In that now it brings together even more into devices that are kind of dumb and not necessarily ones that the iPhone is casting into as much as just interacting with and talking to. It really just multiplies that out. But it also requires kind of a separate, at least for now, a separate device, meaning if you leave the house with your phone, it all doesn't just fall apart, because it still needs at least some kind of hub device keeping that going. But it's pretty cool if you've started to build up your home, and it doesn't take that much to, like, for magic to occur. You could just have your phone and a hub and just one light bulb that's controllable, and just walking into your room and saying, turn this on or turn that off or change it to this color or something like that. It becomes, everyone can start to see the future when that happens. It's kind of a magic trick that doesn't get old yet.
Agreed. Very, very, very strongly agreed.
And that was iOS 8 when that came out.
Yeah, I do like HomeKit. Although I have a very dysfunctional relationship with it, because HomeKit is still incredibly fragile, and it seems ridiculous to me that here we are in iOS 14.6, HomeKit came out with iOS 8, and we still don't have a way from Apple to actually back up your entire HomeKit configuration. And you have to go to third parties for that.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's
weird. It's more advanced in some ways than other providers, and just ridiculously missing big features like what you say, Jeff. And here's one. The good news is HomeKit is pretty good with regard to letting you set up multiple homes if you happen to have multiple homes, or if you're managing multiple homes for others. Yeah, moving a device from one home to another, brutal. Brutal. Yeah. You got to delete it in the one and add it into the other. And if you can't access the other home, oh, that's a fun time too. So yeah, very. It's not something they're paying enough attention to, and you know, you wonder why they have all the money on earth basically at this point. They could. The good news is, I guess it's still progressing. At least we don't see that they've abandoned it, which is. Stockholm syndrome tells me that's a good thing.
Well, at least it's not Google, because with Google, every product they announce, you know, is already dead, because at some point they're just going to cancel it anyhow.
Yeah, with Apple, you get the fun aspect of being able to invest hope in you know, dreams before
that's right. You know what? Another good episode, if we could put together a definitive list of all the abandoned products.
Oh, we're going to need Apple's ever done. Great abandoned products? Yeah, let's limit it to the great abandoned products.
That would be a good episode too.
Yeah, and the great thing is that ACM listeners are so on top of it. They're making the list so that they can send it to Brian. So thank you for that.
Yes, listeners. I appreciate that in advance, for sure. All right, do either one of you have any more?
Of course.
Oh, I got plenty. I mean,
all right, I'll give you another one. Accessibility.
Okay.
And accessibility, just as a... as a group catch-all. Of features,
yeah.
As a catch-all, is I think really important, because there are far too many companies that have not invested in accessibility in the way that they should, and Apple has invested in accessibility to such a level that it's like the go-to for a lot of people. And these accessibility features, in many cases, are so good that they spill over into features that everyone wants to use. For example, I turned on the accessibility feature that makes it more obvious when I've tapped a toggle. Accessibility feature in iOS 14, double tap on the back of your phone to make some action happen.
Yeah, there are some. I'm sorry. Did you already make this point that there are some accessibility features that are very useful to the what's the term to use these days?
So the funny thing is, Brian, that's actually what we were just discussing.
Oh, excellent. I'm glad to rejoin you, though.
Well, welcome back to the show, Brian. Excellent. It's great to have you here today.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic.
So, yeah, and while there's always room for improvement, I think Apple's attention to accessibility has been much better than so many other technology companies.
Probably better than everybody else's, other technology company.
That's probably a safe thing to say.
Yeah, if anyone has any contrary information, I've been wrong throughout this episode quite a bit. So, you know, be sure and let me know, please. John, you got another one?
Sure. Files. It only took to iOS 11 to have file management.
But to be fair, like bad that. File management.
Well, true. You got that exactly right. Really bad file management, but at least some file management. iOS 11. And drag and drop. Also iOS 11. Along with the iPad dock.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that it took iOS 11 for drag and drop, isn't it?
Yep.
Holy crap, and
kind of really? In that same vein, multitasking was version 4, and split view for the iPad was iOS 9. But, you know, drag and drop kind of needed, well, split view kind of is enhanced with the drag and drop. So those basic features, yeah, talk about some of them coming late.
All right, so wow. We are long enough into this episode. I think we should probably go to a rapid fire, non-big discussion format.
Okay. So,
Let's.
I got a bunch.
Yeah, let's just lay out five.
Enforce security wiping of the device, iOS 2.
Mm.
Find my iPhone and everything that followed. Find my iPhone came out in iOS 3, but you know, find
that's my friends, on my list find as my well. Devices.
Spotlight, iOS 3.
Mm-hmm.
FaceTime,
another on my list.
And all the you know the group FaceTime and everything.
Another on my list.
iOS 4.
Can we? Okay, I'm breaking your rule, Brian, because we need to talk about FaceTime real quick. And FaceTime is great because it gives us that whole visual thing for communication. But where I saw it really driven home just how valuable a feature this is was the first time I went into an Apple store right after whichever phone model it was that offered FaceTime came out. And I'm looking at the phone and a group of three people, all hearing impaired, came in and they were looking at two iPhones at the same time. And they started playing with FaceTime, signing to each other. And they started crying because that Aww. Was the first time that they had a smartphone or any kind of phone Aww. That actually addressed the way that they communicate. And that, while some people look at FaceTime and say, oh, this is just like a little gimmicky feature. No, it's life-changing.
Fair enough.
Okay. I love it. Keep going with your rapid-fire list.
Car navigation, iOS 3. Notes that sync, iOS 4. How about printing, iOS 4.2 with AirPrint. CDMA version of the iPhone, 4.2. Notification Center, iOS 5. iCloud and all the syncing and whatever services it does for better and for worse, also iOS 5. How about Siri, iOS 5. Pretty huge and life-changing for me in just quality of life. It makes things a lot better around here. Multitask gestures, iOS 5. Let's see. Wireless CarPlay, iOS 9. Am I skipping a bunch? Oh, yep, I am. Passbook, which became Apple Wallet, iOS 6.
You know,
you could thank Mr. Forstall for that, Brian.
Yeah, Passbook. And when I was going back and looking when features were coming in and I hit Passbook, I'm like, oh, I forgot that's what it used to be called.
Yeah.
Yep.
Maps by Apple when Google was dropped. I consider that an awesome feature. iOS 6. Lost mode.
Hold on. The rollout of Maps was botched.
It was botched in only one way, in my opinion. It was botched in that they should have called it a beta, and they didn't. Otherwise,
they should have called it a beta, and it should have been offered alongside Google Maps instead of Google Maps at first. And then,
I will agree with that.
That I mean, that's the big problem, and that's what I said. I was coming for you, Mr. Forstall. It's all about Maps, and also he hated the flat,
which design. He's right about.
He's
been proven right about that.
He's wrong about that, yeah. But. That's okay.
No, you know, proven right about that because that's what the current iOS is. It's going back to that. It's going away from being flat. So he was right.
So it's going back to skeuomorphic.
It is not going back to skeuomorphic. It might it's be more skeuomorphic gone away than from it was. Flat.
That's correct.
But it so is not. Right. Listen, that's. I'm showing a screenshot of just the first app I opened.
Yeah,
Brian's holding up his phone to the glass in the booth.
That's flat. The booth. Where is Brian?
That is flat.
All right.
Flat. Listen, flat. That's flat. Look.
I've had it. Yeah, there's 3D notches in those toggles. So look at those. Okay. Yeah, and iOS 7 was the introductory of the sucky flat UI. So that was a major feature. But it did include Control Center, which was pretty good. And voice memos were kind of refined in that version. iCloud Drive was iOS 8. Health App, iOS 8. Apple Pay, iOS 8. iOS 8 was a pretty good later release. It had a lot of stuff. HomeKit, as well, as we mentioned. 8.2 had Apple Watch
support. How many more do you have on this list?
I got many. You're actually upset. You're actually upset someone prepared for this.
Well, no, I'm just
surprised.
The health app is cool. I would say that Health Kit is more important than the health app.
Okay,
fair but, enough. Well, I mean,
it's that is the front end, the visual front end to Health Kit for users. Health Kit is on my list. And I'm with you, Brian. HealthKit is really important. It's really changed the way so many people, me included, interact with our own health and fitness data, and with the data that our healthcare providers are maintaining.
All appropriate, but I don't think that synced notes is at the same level as drag and drop and
visual voicemail.
Visual voicemail, for instance. So I don't know. I think your list is.
Are you done beating up that straw man? Are you done beating up that straw man? Did you get him good?
He's got a little life left in him.
All right. Let us know when that fight's over. Okay. Moving on to something productive, because someone did something productive. How about Wi-Fi calling in iOS 9? Live photos in iOS 9.1. I think the update in iOS 10 with the included stickers and effects and stuff and messages was pretty good. It kind of revitalized the app. Apple News, iOS 10. 11.2.5, HomePod support. That was useful. AirPlay 2, 11.4. Group FaceTime, 12.1. Car Key, iOS 13.6. Widgets and Translate from iOS 14. Fitness in 14.3. And the only feature from iOS 15 so far, I agree with Jeff, is the
universal control
stuff. Yeah, there you go. That's my list.
All right, do you have anything to find out? Anything in your rapid fire list, Jeff?
John hit pretty much everything that I had on my list. But one thing you didn't hit, John, that I think is big and will continue to get much bigger: shortcuts.
Okay, I'll give it you. I don't really use it, but I could see a lot of people do and enjoy it.
If shortcuts doesn't get canned by Apple, which I think is always a real danger, it could become a very useful and big thing for at least a sizable subset of users.
It already is. So here's the thing. We know that Apple's other automation platforms are dead, even though they're still here. I mean, they're sitting on death row. Apple Script is basically dead, and Automator is sitting right beside it. And Apple has... actually, it was Craig Federighi during the WWDC keynote said that shortcuts is the future of automation for Apple. And to me, what I got out of that was he was saying, this is the only automation platform for Apple moving forward. And I think the caveat to that is JavaScript will be part of that as well, because shortcuts will now be cross-platform. JavaScript is already cross-platform. And so you have your combo automation platform for all of your Apple devices. And the stuff that we can do today with shortcuts is pretty impressive. And when it comes to the Mac, well, people are going to be really disappointed, because there's very little that Apple's going to have built in on day one into shortcuts on the Mac. But hopefully that will change over time. And John, I'm totally aware that I could be having Stockholm syndrome, because Apple could totally Google this and decide that they're going to abandon all automation, which I think would be a horrible move. But it's not going to come for a while if it does.
I agree with you on everything you've said, but I also don't give a darn, and I've learned to ignore Apple because they're so unstable and unreliable in this, and anything that is anywhere near approaching enterprise friendly, because you know there's only like a million pre-press businesses and other businesses that have built their entire businesses on these things that they're ready to pull the rug out from under them. And these days what I rely on is Keyboard Maestro, because it's an independent third-party app that is awesome, by the way, highly recommended. Does a lot of automation for you, very powerful, and is less flaky than Apple on this.
Yeah, and I'm with you there, and I feel really bad for all of the ad agencies and printing and publishing companies and all these other companies that have built up these incredible workflows through AppleScript, and they have to freeze their equipment in time, yeah, in essence, because they need to maintain those incredibly powerful automated workflows that they've developed. And that's not something that you can do with Automator. And it's certainly not something that you can do with shortcuts. And I mean, maybe that will change in the future with shortcuts, but man, that's still years away.
Brian says he's going to hold his breath the entire time. He knows that, and it's going to be super enterprise friendly and last for a long time.
None of that is true. Actually, literally, not only my actions, but none of the statements that my actions are theoretically dependent upon are true.
Shocking revelations on ACE.
All right, folks. Thank you very much for doing all the work for this episode. I very much appreciate it. Clearly, by the way, clearly, as listeners who read the title of this episode already know, we were in fact limited to iOS with one mention of iPadOS. So we'll have to come back and do macOS.
Oh, I forgot one other thing I had on my list that I'll throw in before we wrap up the show.
Okay.
Touch ID and Face ID.
All right. Yes, for sure. For sure. I can't believe that almost got left out.
Yep. Those Same. Are great.
How about notifications? Like, which is both the worst thing and best thing in mobile operating systems ever. Although Apple may not have introduced notifications.
I mentioned Notification Center in iOS 5, but
did you?
Who's counting?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, I wasn't actually paying attention. So.
Oh, and thanks for scolding me for being prepared. By the way, that's awesome.
You're welcome. Make sure you are equally prepared for macOS, because I have more scolding left in me.
That's all I was hoping for, that at least my work does not go unrewarded.
John, I already have a nice list for the macOS list show, and I presume you do as well.
I have a little list.
Yes. I do not.
And really?
Talking revelations keep coming on ACA.
good stuff. All right, well, listen, my sense of timing is fairly okay. My maybe ability to execute is less okay, but and that is this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, you can write me at acm@macobserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom. It's recorded just for TMO. And once again, want to thank LinkedIn for sponsoring this particular episode. LinkedIn Jobs will help you hire the right person for your role. Did you know every week nearly 40 million job seekers visit LinkedIn? You can post your first job for free at linkedin.com/ACM. That's linkedin.com/ACM to post your first job for free. Jeff and what's your name, John? Thank you both. Appreciate you being here.
It was awesome.
It was.
John, I can't wait. I'm very proud of you for preparing for the show. Well done.
Whatever.
Thanks.